Golf Smarter number 500.
Happy birthday, Fred.
Published on August 4th, 2015. Golf's ultimate goal, shooting your age, with General Manager of Paradise Valley Golf, Rich Cessna.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Rich.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it very much.
It's great to have you on, and it's great to have you in your own community here.
Thank you.
I'm going to take notes as we have our conversation. I hope you don't mind.
Certainly.
And also, not only will we have a Q&A, but we're going to also have some trivia questions, and maybe you can win some prizes when we're all done. And we have some gifts for you when we're done as well. We are live here at the Paradise Valley Estates in Fairfield, California, which is right near Travis Air Force Base in Northern California. And this is really fun for me to be here with all of you today. Thank you so much. Rich, briefly, tell me your history in golf, and then I have other questions for you about that.
Certainly. Played high school golf, and then went on to the San Diego Golf Academy. Ran out of money. And
story of many golfers.
Joined the United States Air Force.
Thank
played
you.
Played golf in the United States Air Force, a lot of golf. Actually tried out for the Air Force golf team and made the team. But got bumped because the major that was retiring unretired.
Oh, of course.
So I went I went back to my duties on the flight line, but spent 4 years in the Air Force. And at the time, I volunteered at a golf course near Luke Air Force Base, which at the time was the only TAC base that did not have a golf course.
Oh.
So I volunteered, and while I'm volunteering, then I had access to both professional and amateur events. I always played as an amateur then. The individual that I worked with at this golf course went on to work for the PGA Tour. Well, my enlistment was coming up, and I was torn between re-upping or whether or not I wanted to stay in golf. And, of course, it was unfortunate for the military, I hope. But fortunate for me, I chose golf, and I went to work for the PGA Tour then.
When did you start playing?
I started playing actually in high school. I didn't start
really?
As a youth. My dad played AAA baseball.
Oh.
For the Philadelphia Phillies organization.
Wow.
He was a catcher.
Very cool.
So the years that he played, he was a home run hitter and a strikeout artist. So I grew up playing baseball.
Okay.
And I injured my shoulder in a bicycle accident between my eighth and ninth year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't going to be able to play baseball that year. So one of my buddies who played golf told the golf coach, you ought to ask Rich to try out for the team. So I did. I went out and thought it was great. But baseball season was coming up, and I tried out for baseball again. But the baseball coach and the golf coach had gotten together and decided that I was playing golf.
Oh, really?
I wasn't playing baseball. And no, it was for the right reason. I was in ninth grade. I was 5 feet tall, weighed 100 pounds. So
that's a golfer's body.
Yeah, it was better for golf than it was for baseball. So, I ended up on the golf team.
So was it the golf coach who was pushing the baseball coach? Or was the baseball coach going, you know what?
I don't
take
know.
Take him. Take him. Go.
I don't know. The two of them conspired to do this, but they made the great choice.
Yeah.
First year, in 10th grade, played pretty well. I picked up the game fairly fast. The fact that I was playing a lot of different sports, being athletic, helped. The baseball movement does help. There is some things that can hinder a golf swing from baseball.
Sure.
But I then went on and got a job at the local golf course. I fell in love. That was it. I was hooked.
Happens to everybody.
It does. So then the next year I became, I was third on the team. And then the following year, I was most improved golfer.
Oh, wow.
So I was progressing, and I was enjoying it an awful lot.
So where did that? How did that get you to become a PGA professional?
After I left the Air Force and joined the PGA Tour, I immediately then joined PGA of America's apprentice program. You're supposed to get it in about achieve your apprenticeship to a Class A golf professional in about 36 months. I did it in 28.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted it. I really wanted it. I loved the game, and I wanted this to be my profession. So once I became a Class A golf professional, then that gives you the opportunity to then start exploring other jobs within the golf industry. So I spent 11 years working for the PGA Tour. And then in 2001, Kemper Sports, who I currently work for, who we just hosted the U.S. Open, Chambers Bay, they hired me away.
Yeah. That didn't go from Kemper Sports. I'm sorry to distract on that.
No. Keep in mind that when the USGA comes in to set up an event, it doesn't matter what golf course it is, it's going to be hard.
It is a U.S. Open. It's supposed to be the hardest test.
It's going to be dried out fast. It's going to be very difficult. Rough will be tall. But for us, it's a huge success.
Yeah. Absolutely. Having it there.
We're the first golf management company to ever be selected to host a U.S. Open.
Oh, as opposed to a specific course or country club?
Exactly right.
Interesting.
And a completely different venue.
Right. Yeah, but do they have any sense? Do they think maybe it's not coming back to Chambers Bay? Because there were so many complaints by the even the Hall of Famers had issues with the golf course.
Well, I think if you look at the results and the numbers that these golfers shot, some of them shot some very low rounds.
Right.
So the guys that shot 74, 75, 76 are probably going to complain, but they'd complain at any golf course they played that shot that number. So, no, I think it'll certainly be back to Chambers Bay.
Was it Nicklaus or Palmer that talked about, when a player complains that it doesn't suit their game, it's like, sorry, you're supposed to suit your game to the course.
That's right. That was Nicklaus. In fact, Nicklaus said he identified those that were complaining and knew he had eliminated them from the field.
Interesting.
Because it wasn't a positive approach. Mm-hmm. Everybody is playing the exact same golf course.
Right.
For every event.
So now, doing a little more research on you, before you started playing golf in high school, you had a very interesting life. Share that. Tell us a story about where you were doing as a young boy.
Well, for anybody that's interested in looking it up, look up KIDCO, KIDCO. It was a movie about my life when I was a young man. When I turned 11, I started my own company. I incorporated, and I became the youngest president of any corporation in the history of the United States at that time. I don't know what it is today. We signed an agreement with the developer in our area to maintain the 7 major streets so that when they were bringing prospective clients out, they wanted no construction debris whatsoever on the streets.
And how old were you?
11.
You were 11. And you 11. Said we?
I am one.
Do you have adults working for you?
Well, we did, in fact. I'm one of 10 kids. I grew up in the farming and ranching industry. And the 4 youngest children were the 4 that were involved in KIDCO. Mm-hmm. And then because we didn't have anybody of legal age, we hired my dad as our general manager. So we had somebody that could at least sign the documents legally.
Sign the checks, yeah.
Absolutely. And we got involved in selling. We had a lot of horses on our property. And we started selling horse manure as fertilizer to the local developer because by California code, you had to encourage growth when you put in a new road for embankments. And the developer found a way to do it for relatively cheap compared to sprigging or any other means of putting vegetation down. Mm-hmm. So once the Board of Equalization got a hold of that, they thought for sure that we were a front for my dad. And so once they came in, they filed charges against us. They threatened us with jail time. It got really crazy. Well, that was invite to send that out to the media. My dad was a great promoter, and so he did so. It immediately hit the news wires. And I ended up on Mike Douglas and Merv Griffin. For folks in the audience who would remember those. Kids are people, too. I was on Ronald Reagan's program twice when he was governor. In fact, I have a famous line from one of his shows. I said, if I was old enough, I would vote for you twice. And Ronald Reagan has written me several times. He had handwritten notes.
Really?
That he wrote to me, and I have
saved. Oh, that's
saved,
awesome.
Yeah. So I had an exciting career as a young man, and Hollywood picked up the story and then made the movie called KIDCO.
You're kidding?
No.
It's about you?
It's about myself and my 3 sisters and what we did with our own business.
Okay, got to look up the movie KIDCO.
Yes. Movie. If you were a staff member of the Board of Equalization in the late 70s when this was going on, they weren't very happy because the number of individuals that called in to their facility in San Diego repeated those calls so often that it shut down their phone system time and time again. And they literally came up with a way for us to be exonerated.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it was terrific.
Great
story. It was a great life growing up.
Yeah, great story. Great story. Let's get back to golf a little bit. And you're talking about Chambers Bay, Kemper Sports. And it seems like numbers are high for great tournaments like this watching. But let's talk about the state of the industry right now. It seems as if there are golf courses closing all over the country. Not many are being built anymore. I think in 2014, I read four courses opened in the United States and one was closing every 11 days.
Correct.
What's going on?
We are no different than any other industry. We are subject to our own economy, whether it be a microeconomy or not, but we're also subject to major recessions. So there's going to be, in every industry, retractions. During the 90s, we were building 200, 300, 400 courses a year based on the prediction that we would never run out of the golfers. We ran out of golfers. As the segment of golfers changed, we then started seeing declining numbers. Mm-hmm. So it's a natural retraction. It's unfortunate. It's the industry I'm in, and I love it. But you are going to have this balance. Many experts say that we have about 16,000 golf courses within the United States. Many experts say that a healthy balance is probably 12,500. So seeing so many golf courses close is just a result of too many being built.
What do you think was the factor that got all the excitement of courses, the glut of courses being built?
A couple things. There was a major report put out in the late 80s that stated that we were so short on golf courses, the supply needed to be increased dramatically. Once developers figured out that you can sell more homes quicker for a higher value along a golf course, and municipalities figured out that they could do the same thing. Municipalities also figured out that they could convert green space, which legally they needed to have a percentage of green space in the city. Instead of it being a park, it'd be a golf course. That also provided residents the opportunity to get in and onto the golf course for a much lesser fee. So there was this kind of a storm that was created. Unfortunately, it ended up with too many golf courses.
And just around that time, there was this lightning rod on television, charismatic golfer who was just dominating the sport as if it's never been done before, Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods, that's exactly right. When I worked for the PGA Tour, you could tell when the best players in the world, especially Tiger, were leading a golf event.
How?
There was a different type of energy. And when the tournament ended each day, the range would be flooded with people.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
The range at the event?
At golf facilities.
Everywhere.
Around the country.
Yeah.
And
oh, I know. Yes.
Definitely
makes
know
total
there
sense.
There was a storm that had been created. It was a great energy.
Right.
So once with Tiger, you've got Tiger Woods. He played, of course, sensational for 10 or 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's had his personal challenges. And as we all know, golf is more psychological than it is physical.
Mm-hmm.
The best golf swings don't win every week. The best mind does.
Okay, so
the
we're back to...
The individual that can control it. You got to be able to control your brain, control your emotions on the golf course. If there's a lot going on in your world, it's difficult to win a golf tournament.
Right. Thank you. I actually had a conversation with a former touring pro, and he said that most people don't understand that when you're on tour, you have to be able to eat and digest anything. You have to be able to sleep on any kind of bed with no problem.
Correct.
You have to adjust to any time zone with no issue. And as far as not getting emotionally involved with the people you meet after the round of golf, you have to block that out of your mind. And that's something we don't realize, how complicated, how difficult it is for somebody to be on the tour. What a grind it is. We all see the 4 days worth, but we don't see beyond that.
That's right. While I was working for the PGA Tour, I used to take time off and travel and teach golf and go to Hawaii and Cabo and different locations throughout the Southwest. I did that repeatedly. And when you get home, you're tired.
Yeah.
And when you go to another location and you're expected to turn it on because you've got a whole group of clients coming in that don't care whether or not you're tired or not.
Exactly.
They want to start the golf instruction. They want to do what's on their schedule. So I feel for the guys that travel and do this for a living. It's a very tough business.
Very tough business. Now let's talk about the state of the game. There's technology has changed the game radically. Technology in golf balls, technology in golf clubs in the last 10, 15 years. And it seems like because people are hitting it so much farther, golf courses are getting longer and longer. But they're building golf courses longer for the touring pros, not for us.
That's correct.
And, you know, there's some courses that I don't have a problem getting the ball in the fairway, but getting the ball close is a lot harder. I mean, the short game really is kind of disappeared because everything is so long. But we even did an episode once called It's Not About How Long, It's About How Close.
That's correct. There's a Titleist commercial right now that talks about the golf ball doesn't know who's hitting it, right? So it doesn't matter what game you have. Play the game according to your satisfaction. What makes you happy? Don't play it at 7,000 yards. Play it at 5,000 yards. Play it at 4,000 yards. Unless you're playing in USGA events and you need to run to the computer after each round and file with the USGA, don't tee off of the tee boxes.
Yeah.
Go out to the forward part of the fairway.
Play it forward.
Play it forward. Part of that program of Play It Forward.
Which is a terrible name, but a great idea.
It works great. Anything that makes it easier for the golfer to enjoy. Mm-hmm. Because the game is inherently difficult. It's the easiest game in the world to enjoy.
I'm not going to dispute that.
Four and a half hours out in a fantastic setting with your friends, with your family. So let's make it more enjoyable.
I've been playing, like I've been saying, about 18 years now. And my wife is now just starting to get interested in playing. And so the rule that we have when we play together is, one, I do not give instruction.
Perfect.
Which helps our relationship. I think every person should take that advice. Do not try to give instruction on a golf course. Their mind gets flooded. But what we do is, if we're playing a par three, she can tee off at the tee box. If we're playing a par four, wherever my ball lands, or equal to where my ball lands if it's out of bounds, she can tee it up right there, right? And if it's a par five, on my second shot.
Correct.
She can. So for her right now is a nice long walk, and she plays 150 to 200 yard holes. And also, if she gets the seven shots, it's time to pick it up and let's go putt, right? And she's fine with that.
We tell lots of folks double par is the max.
Okay.
And for certain events, we'll cater an event at our golf course and also adjust the game. You know, so if we have a group that we've seen two or three times, and we know that they have a difficult time getting around the golf course, we'll assist them with a new game.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to find a way to get the folks. Again,
they're trying so many things.
Absolutely, it's got to be enjoyable, but at the same time, it has to feel like a game to them.
Yeah. One of the most interesting things that's being tried right now, just for the fun of the game, is 15-inch holes.
Correct.
Have you tried this?
No, we thought about it. The biggest challenge with the 15-inch cups, I love the idea. I don't know that I would put it on every single hole just because of the difficulty of changing that cup. It's very difficult to keep a smooth surface on the greens. A 4.5-inch cup is tough enough to keep it. We've all putted over a cup that's
yesterday's
dropped
cup,
a little more, or is, hasn't been quite seated properly.
Right.
You can imagine trying a 15-inch cup and trying to keep the surface
of it. Not a cup, that's a plate.
Yeah, so I like the idea. We have a couple of 5-inch cups at Rancho on the chipping green.
Oh, okay.
Which is great to encourage people to see that ball going in the hole more often.
Right.
And we have talked about doing special events where we might put an 8-inch or a 15-inch cup in for a closest to the pin or a hole-in-one contest.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's spectacular. I don't know if superintendents are ever going to be able to perfect moving 15-inch cups.
That's the
all
big
over
issue.
The
course superintendents.
Correct.
I know a golf course near where I live in Marin County tried it for an afternoon. They tried a day, and they said that the rounds were down to 3.5 hours, and people were knocking 10 to 15 strokes off.
On
every hole. So, and they had a lot of fun with it, but it's not a score you can record.
Correct. And the purists are going to fight that as well.
Yeah.
Purists are going to say the
purists.
No way we can do that.
And that's a whole other conversation about who is the USGA really concerned about. You know, are we really? I know they want to grow the game. I know they want to bring in new golfers, but really, it's the old guard who are saying, "No, get out of my way."
You're right. You're absolutely right.
And I've always felt like the USGA was not an advocate for the golfer, but for the golf course.
Well, I think they're an advocate for the game itself because it encompasses so many traditions. And traditions are hard to break. They're hard to get rid of, hard to change.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're certainly part of the purist approach to the game.
Mm-hmm.
However, they are engaged in a lot of programs that are encouraging the growth of the game.
Yes.
So I think you'll see in the next 10 years, you'll see a big change.
Well, it would be great. I want to focus now, because we're here at Paradise Valley Estates today, I wanted to focus on issues that seniors have in golf. And even for the audience, the Golf Smarter audience that ranges in age from, 12 and up, and I've gotten emails from 12-year-olds and 80-year-olds, eventually all of us are going to be senior golfers.
Correct.
That's the whole point. We're all going to have the issues that are most demanding as you get older. Obviously, the first one that would be coming to mind would be pace of play.
I think we've gone from... Well, first of all, pace of play has always been an issue since golf was created.
Yeah.
Everybody's always pushing to play at a faster pace.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody once said, a good walk spoiled.
Right.
All right, and it really is a terrific 4.5 hours out there. Anybody that thinks that 40 seniors of 80 years of age are going to play in 4 to 4.5 hours under the standard setting is dreaming. It's unfair to go out and push those folks around the golf course. Our whole world has sped up. So if you look at the challenges we had with pace of play anyways, then you start adding this world that we're living in with electronics. Everything is fast.
Mm-hmm.
Those folks that are new to the game are expecting that same thing to happen. It's unrealistic. And if you start adding the new golfers that we have coming into the game, who don't have much experience, who do not have the proper etiquette yet, or no understand the rules, the basics, those are going to impact pace of play as well.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to pick up and move forward.
Right.
When in reality, after you've hit the ball 8-10 times, pick up and move forward.
Please.
Just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Just continue to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So for those folks...
mark your good shots, not all shots.
That's exactly right. Nobody is keeping track at the USGA or the PGA Tour of what your score was for the day. It just doesn't matter. Just enjoy it.
Yeah.
So pace of play is always going to be a challenge. It's never going to go away. We as operators, though, have to continue to find ways to move golfers along. We like to tell folks that you're not slow, but that you're falling behind our desired pace. There's a nice way to say it. We'd like you to regain your position on the golf course based on time. It's not always easy.
Right.
I've worked at resorts where people pay $200-$300 a person to play. Their answer is, I paid my money. I'm going to take as long as I want.
Ooh.
That's tough.
But so did everybody else here on the golf course.
And that's our answer. So sometimes you actually remove those folks from the golf course.
Wow.
because you can't have four impacting 200.
That's right.
So it's always going to be a challenge. It's never going to go away. But we as operators have to find ways to encourage people to play at a faster pace. And sometimes that means our marshals have to recognize that certain golfers don't understand that. Like everybody waiting for somebody to hit. Well, if you're going to play at a reasonable pace, you play your ball when it's your turn or when it's safe to hit. It doesn't. Somebody else is not ready. Don't wait for them just because it's not your turn based on the distance you are away from the pin. Just play golf.
What are the instructions that marshals get about trying to keep the pace of play moving? Because mostly what I see with marshals is I'm driving going, you're moving slow. Come on, pick it up. And they're no help.
Well, that's remember that generally the individuals that take those jobs are people that have retired from other industries.
Be nice.
They're looking for something to do. Right? They're looking for something to do.
Yeah.
Our facilities converted from the marshals being a paid position to a volunteer position simply based on the economics.
Of course.
We needed to find a way to save money. Mm-hmm. So you're asking somebody, a general manager, Rick Rennick, who I worked for at the PGA Tour, was a gem. He said one time at one of our staff meetings, I wouldn't put my father out there in that job. That's the hardest job in the golf course. And it truly is. It really is.
Yeah.
They are an ambassador to the game. They are,
and to the property.
They are an individual that the golfers are going to see the most within that four and a half hours that they're there. So you hope that they create a relationship, which is what we tell them. We want them to introduce themselves to them. We want them to say hello. But when there is a challenge, there is a way to approach golfers. And it's not driving up on them during a shot and telling them they're slow. It's waiting for the appropriate moment to drive up and say, folks, I need your help. You have to get golfers to buy into the fact that they are responsible for their own pace of play.
May I make a suggestion?
Absolutely.
I would appreciate that if marshals have noticed that a specific group is slow, or if they're sitting in their cart on the fairway watching them tee off and they see that the ball is going to be difficult to find, mm-hmm. why can't the marshal mark where the ball is? Why can't they take their hat and put, I found your ball, so that you don't have to spend 5, 6, 7, 10 minutes looking for your ball? You know, it's like, that to me is where the marshal could really help out.
And
if
we
they,
do that. We,
good,
it's called forecanting.
For yes.
Yeah, we do that.
good for
we
you.
We actually teach our staff to rake bunkers.
Wow.
Right? To
wow.
pull the flag, to That's give weird. Walkers an assist, put them in the cart, drive them forward.
Is this a Rancho Solano and Paradise Valley States golf course thing, or is this a Kemper Sports thing?
This is a Paradise Valley Rancho Solano, yeah. but I'm sure it's done at every facility. The one thing that Kemper Sports does is allow each facility to run as their own entity.
Okay.
So sometimes the rules that we have at this facility may not apply at another facility.
Okay.
So we adjust accordingly. But yeah, the marshal is there to help you around the golf course. That's his or her job.
All right, let's talk about what things we can do to help pick up the pace of play without having to deal with the marshals. And let's just assume, again, we're talking about seniors. Let's just assume we're in a golf cart. We've got a couple people in a golf cart. That's going to help immediately if they're not walking. It's going to make it a little faster. What suggestions could you make that would help them pick up the pace in the golf cart?
Two golfers in a cart drive up to the first golf ball. That person gets their yards. Maybe they're looking at GPS. They get their yardage. They get their club that they want to strike it with. And then if it's close, if it's a shot to the green, you want them to take their putter and their wedge and their towel if they have a towel. And they can then walk forward after they strike their shot while the other golfer leaves to hit their shot. You tend to see a lot of golfers will sit and wait. They hit their shot. They get back in the cart. The two of them drive. Sometimes they do it as four. And the carts will follow each other from shot to shot. Well, try it. It happens a lot. You'd be surprised.
So what you're saying is go to the first ball that you come to. Drop that golfer off.
Yes.
Let him take everything he needs. Then go to your ball. And as soon as he hits, you're ready to go.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And then that if the golfer, the first golfer is on the green, second golfer hits their ball, he can drive by and pick up that golfer.
Yeah.
And hit to the green. Moving. I like to put my golf bag on the cart, and then whoever I'm playing with, I like to walk. And I can literally, by the time I walk up to my golf ball, I will wait because other golfers haven't quite finished yet. Because I'm ready to go. I know. I'm walking up. I'm already looking down for yardage markers. I'm ready. That cart gets there. I pull my club. I hit. I go.
Correct.
There's no waiting around. You got to move. It's a cycle. It's a feeling that you get out there, a rhythm. Everybody needs to play at a certain rhythm.
Okay. Another issue I would think that everybody has, and it's not just seniors, but as we age, the biggest complaint is I'm not hitting the ball as far as I used to.
That's correct. And it will happen to everybody.
But I have played with some senior golfers, and I've played with some women who don't hit the ball far, and they beat me.
That's correct.
Because they're just hitting it straight. They just, you know, plugging away, and they're getting their fives on every hole, or sometimes they'll get a four and a three, but they're just keep plugging to keep the ball in the fairway.
That's exactly right. That's why some senior golfer groups, mm-hmm. can get around the golf course relatively fast. If they're decent golfers and they don't hit or don't have a tremendous amount of side spin, their golf ball is always in the fairway. It's always in front of the green. It's always somewhere they can find it. Young golfers like to swing harder, which produces more spin, and golf balls that go all over the place. They're always looking for it.
Right. That's the military golf, right?
That's
left, right. Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure the folks here at Paradise Valley understand that one.
But have you ever played Ray Ray golf? Anybody here ever hear of Ray Ray golf? I frequently play Ray Ray golf. One shot I hit like Ray Floyd, the next one I hit like Ray Charles.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes.
So now that we're not hitting the ball as far, there's a couple things that we can do to maybe pick up a yard or two. And one is your body, and two is your equipment.
Correct.
Let's talk about your body for a moment. Fitness. Flexibility.
There are lots of programs available today to encourage a golfer to become more flexible, and some strength training. Mm-hmm. If you look at the best players in the world over the, say, the last 100 years, only a couple of them, one being Tiger Woods, was ever a workout fanatic that actually put on a lot of muscle. You look at Ben Hogan, Sam Snead, Tom Watson, Jack Nicklaus, all the great players. What did they do? They played a lot of golf.
Right.
And they kept that motion, constantly moving. So I would encourage anybody that's a senior that wants to get a little more length off the tee or just length throughout their bag, they've got to stretch more and try to get into some physical program that they can build some strength. Second was the equipment. You asked about the equipment.
Well, I want to get, but okay. There's also flexibility.
Flexibility, yeah. Well,
that's
as you
strength.
Stretch, absolutely. You've got to stretch. You've got to continue to try to keep the muscles elongated and the joints somewhat supple.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. And now let's talk about the equipment as well.
All right. So the thing that we see the most in the golf industry is ill-fitted equipment. First of all, young people think that they should be able to swing really stiff shafts or play muscle-back golf clubs, which, for any of those that don't know, that's the difference between a tour professional's club and a club that is considered a cavity back is more the amateur's club.
Mm-hmm. Forgiving?
Much more forgiving. And so the person that's new to the game actually is a disservice to them if you do not get them the proper clubs. Somebody new to the game should be swinging regular shafts, cavity back clubs, anything that's a forgiving golf club. Get them lessons. For those that are of the senior age, they tend to still swing clubs that are too stiff and also too short. As we get older, we'd like to lengthen the golf club just ever so slightly and go to a much softer shaft and the most forgiving golf head you can buy. You put that combination together, you will definitely play better because the equipment is going to match your body type.
And generally, getting fitted for clubs is free. I mean, you can,
correct,
at a pro shop, at a big box store, you can find people, but it's finding the right, or even a custom club maker. But it's finding one that you trust, that has some credibility,
finding
a good club fitter.
That's correct. The Paradise Valley, 2 years ago, we built our own golf performance center.
Oh.
And so we started 2 years ago with, now 2 years later, we have facilities from all over Northern California visiting us to see what we did.
Awesome. Congratulations.
And, we fit. And we have Kevin Hansen, who has built clubs for the past 25 years, including on the PGA Tour. Kevin really knows his stuff.
Wow.
And when you go see Kevin, he will have you hit your golf clubs, and then he'll put you through a series of tests of other golf clubs. And we use the same technology that the PGA Tours use. So you get to see on the screen what your golf ball is doing, what your club head speeds are, how fast the ball travels. All those statistics that we need to determine what's the best golf club for you. And you would be surprised at how many people are way off, not just slightly off in their golf clubs. They are way off of the mark. We get them fitted. They can't believe how easy it is to hit the golf ball.
Yeah.
And their game improves. But what else improves? Their enjoyment.
Right.
If you're hitting bladed shots all over the golf course because you can't get the ball in the air,
I can't
it's no
tell,
fun.
Yeah, no, I can't tell you how much, you know, I this past month, at my past 20 rounds, I was looking at my my NCGA gin, and my past 20 rounds, I've had three rounds in the 70s, which is a huge accomplishment for me at all, and only one in the 90s. And that is a huge goal for me, which was try to get less rounds in the 90s and more. And the better I found that the better I become, the more fun it is. Although I love being out there, I love being outdoors, I love the walk, golf has become more fun as I've gotten better. And I've incorporated so many of these things, getting fitted for the clubs, you know, having the right clubs, picking up the pace of play. One of the other things that I do, and I can easily check my ego at the door, and I have a lot of problem with my friends on this, is playing different tee boxes. I don't need to play all the way back. I know sometimes I'll get in less trouble if I do, but playing, you know, to me, it's I want to go out and score as best I can and have fun. So I'll play the white tees, even though my slope may suggest that I should be in the middle tees. Again, for seniors, drop the ego.
Drop the ego. Absolutely. And if you're not going to play the forward tees, put it up in the fairway.
It's okay.
Keep going.
It's okay to tee it up.
Still make it
the
enjoyable.
The goal should be, right, that you want to hit your second shot with an 8-iron or less.
That's right.
Right? That's what they do on the tour.
That's exactly right. So the farther forward you go, find that mark. And for the folks that live in this area that play our golf courses all the time, we're not going to tell you that you can't tee off from the fairway. We're not going to restrict you to the tee box.
Right.
I took some lessons from an individual many, many years ago who told me to start playing the forward tees. And I said, "What, you want me to play a forward tees? But I'm already shooting in the 70s in that." He said, "I want you to get accustomed to seeing birdies on your scorecard. And I want you to get the feeling that once you make a lot of birdies from there, then I want you to move back one set of tees and play
a lot of rounds until you
start making a lot. It's a mindset.
It's about your
90%
confidence.
90% of golf is nothing but mental. We get on our own way. So if we can convince our golf ball to go where it's supposed to go, because we have confidence in every single club in the bag, you start enjoying, you start seeing those low scores. And it doesn't matter whether you're a tour player or whether you're a senior.
Great piece of advice.
Follow the same advice.
It's about confidence.
Absolutely.
It's all about confidence. We did a show a couple of weeks ago, and I think it was called Golf is 100% Mental and 100% Physical.
There you go.
It's all you get.
It'll drive you crazy, that's for sure.
But the key to scoring, putting.
Short game.
Yeah. Short game.
You bet. Absolutely.
What do seniors, they can take advantage of us with that. Because
yes.
More time to practice if they're retired, don't have to worry about length, and not always difficult a thing to practice. Especially if it's just putting, you can do it in your own place. If you get a 7-foot putting mat, just practice your line.
That's exactly right. Practice distances. Practice the 3-footers and without a cup.
Awesome.
Practice on the carpet and practice to those different distances, because if you can control the distance, all you have to do now is select the correct line. I mean, it's obviously both. You have to have the correct line, you got to have the correct speed. But if you're practicing that distance, that means you're always in the area. You're always around that hole because the distance is correct.
Right. Right. I want to not only invite the Golf Smarter audience, but I want to invite everybody here to participate in a drawing that we're having on Golf Smarter. We're giving away some wedges from the brand new Ben Hogan Golf Company.
Excellent.
They've just returned. A company that used to be called Score Golf, and before that, Eidolon, out of Texas, and they've moved the company to Fort Worth. They bought the brand, the Ben Hogan brand, and we've talked about it on the program a lot. And very exciting. They've just come out this year with a new set of irons called the Fort Worth 15s and a new set of wedges, and they're custom fit for every player. What they do is every degree of loft is available all the way through from your 3-iron, which they don't call a 3-iron anymore. They have them by degrees, all the way through to a 62-degree wedge. I've been playing the Score Golf wedges in my bag over here for a while, and I don't play a 9-iron. I play my 41-degree. I don't play my pitching wedge. I play a 45-degree. Mm-hmm. Took a while to get used to that, but I love it. And now we're going to be giving away four pairs of these TK15 Ben Hogan golf wedges.
Mm-hmm. Anything with Ben Hogan's name on it has to be good.
Right. We're very excited. And they, just this year, the PGA Merchandise Show in Orlando in January was the announcement of the introduction of these new Ben Hogan line of golf clubs. And the press has been going nuts. They've been very excited about it. They hit them there, and everybody loved them. And I'm actually getting my set. They're arriving at my house today. I'm frustrated I'm not here because I want to break this box open. Very excited. But for those here, if you want to enter to win, we invite you to do so. Go to benhogangolf.com/golfsmarter for our podcast listeners. In the show notes, you can click on the link there, and you can win a pair of the TK15 wedges. And only Ben Hogan allows you to fully custom fit these wedges to your game, to your irons, and regardless of what brand you play. And they have what they call the complimentary Hogan Fit Personal Bag Mapping Analysis. And it's an online form at benhogangolf.com where you answer all the questions about what clubs you play, how long you hit each club, what your ball flight is, high, low, medium, and then they'll work with you and customize the wedge so you get exactly what you want, the shaft you want, the grip that you want. And they're very, very exciting about getting these new clubs to market, and they just started coming out in April. But we want to give everyone here a chance to win them. Again, go to benhogangolf.com/golfsmarter. Fill out your entry form. Deadline for entry is August 17th. We'll midnight Pacific time, and we're going to announce the winner on our show, all four winners on our show on August 18th. So good luck to everybody, and I hope that you do enter. And while you're there, go through the bag mapping analysis. It's all free. Well, this has been phenomenal. I appreciate your time on this.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Up next on episode number 501, our gambling gurus return with their predictions for this year's PGA Championship.